Welcome back to the show. Evan Bray, good to have you here on a beautiful day here at Ag in Motion. It's day number two of the three-day show, and I'm very appreciative. Co-op Agro has us on site, and the Co-op Farm Building has this beautiful overhang that's got a little bit of shade, which, of course, on a sunny, hot day like today, has been absolute godsend. So we're appreciative of that. Well, Ag in Motion is where agriculture comes to talk, to explore, to maybe in some ways commiserate. I've just had a couple of talks with a couple of farmers here this morning talking about, you know, gosh, we love the rain, but boy, some of those low spots in the field still causing problems when they're trying to get out there and do some spraying. So this is what it's all about, innovation at its finest. And someone who's on the cutting edge of agriculture for our country is our friend Sean Haney, the founder and CEO of RealAgriculture.com. Of course, you just heard the Real Ag Minute. As I'm sitting beside Sean Haney listening to the Real Ag Minute, I'm like, this is surreal.
It was making me wonder, does that guy know what he's talking about? What's going on here?
I think
here?
He does. Yeah. I've had him on the show before. Sean, thanks so much for being here. This show is always impressive.
It is very impressive. It is an extensive footprint. And I was here yesterday. I think the crowd's even up today. Mm-hmm. There's not only a lot of farmers walking around, there's a lot of farm families walking around. Sure. You see a lot of kids, you know, crawling all over the equipment. And it's really, you know, kind of some inspiration for the next generation coming back to the farm.
Yeah, I just actually had a young fellow stop by this morning, 6 years old, and wanted to say hi. He said he's a big fan of the show, but he spends a lot of time with his dad in the tractor.
He so doesn't have a choice.
He listened, yeah. So we took a picture. We threw it up on the Facebook page, but he was decked out. He had his John Deere hat on. And I said, I love your hat. He says, yeah, it's my favorite. And his dad said, it should be. I spent a bit of money to get that hat.
That's an expensive hat.
That's usually the way it
Very
goes.
Very expensive hat.
How are farmers feeling right now generally about things? We had a bit of a late seed this spring because of the moisture, but things have settled out, and I feel like many parts of the province crops are looking great.
I think that's a pretty good evaluation, yeah. Actually. You know, I think if you compare to where we thought we were before we put seed in the ground, there was a lot of concern about some of the dryness, and we just, you know, we've been through a real dry bias period. We were hoping that we'd be able to push, you know, have a bit of a late spring based on what a lot of the meteorologists were saying, try to get past that, you know, push that drought back into later in the season. We kind of got what we wished for, and we got a lot of June rain, some people way too much. Mm-hmm. But all in all, I think the crop's looking pretty good. There's mm-hmm. some concern about some of the special crops like lentils having a little bit too wet of feet. But if you look at the cereals, the wheat, the barley, canola, and we got a record-sized canola crop across Western Canada, I think farmers are feeling pretty good about this year, and the market's actually supported it. The fundamentals are lining up. I think this year there's concern about farm profitability on the whole, but we're in a lot better spot right now than we were, say, 3 months ago.
Mm-hmm. I was chatting with a fella about a week ago who is not a farmer, and he said, you know, I really understand what farmers mean about timing, because he mentioned a farmer who he knows whose crop, canola crop, was about 6 inches tall, and then we got that blast of heat,
yeah.
And it was like 2 feet tall within a couple of weeks. And
yeah.
You know, the timing of weather, you can't overstate the importance.
And precipitation is a great example of that,
sure.
Right? So if you said, okay, you know, we have 10 inches so far on my farm, if I got 8 of those inches in one weekend too early, mm-hmm. that really is not very effective and is not very helpful. What I'm hearing from a lot of farmers here at the show this week is that, hey, good start, we're okay, but boy, we're going to need a little bit more precip to kind of finish this crop so it really achieves its potential. Because right now it's about achieving the potential.
Sean Haney is my guest, founder and CEO of RealAgriculture.com. You and I have talked tariffs a number of times on the show, and here we are this week again, the U.S. president announcing more tariffs, whether they come to fruition or not, yet to be seen. But how, just generally speaking, how are things on the tariff front when it comes to ag?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of concern about, you know, agriculture is obviously the U.S. market is critical for Canadian agriculture, especially if you look, the number one customer for Canadian canola products is the United States. And we talked about China a lot, but based on the U.S. biofuel policy, there's a lot of canola oil. We've expanded the domestic crush, so there's a lot of opportunity for biofuels in the U.S. for Canadian canola. I think there's concern because agriculture knows, and it's the same in Canada as you talk to U.S. farm groups and farmers, it's really kind of a do-no-harm approach. We got a really good thing going. Obviously, dairy is an issue that has to be sorted out, and that will happen. It's really the auto, steel, aluminum, lumber that is the key focus, and agriculture is trying to stay out of some of that prop wash, so to speak, is a real concern. People want certainty, And that's hard to find right now.
Well, and when you think about steel and aluminum, use that as an example. You walk around the grounds here at Ag and Motion. Oh, my gosh. And I mean, and the amount of manufacturing that's happening, not just in Canada, but even here in Saskatchewan. I mean, those costs, if they are rising because of tariffs, they get passed on to farmers. There's always that bottom line. And we go back to farmers are price takers, not price setters.
And there's a lot of manufacturing that happens in the province of Saskatchewan. So, you know, this bin right in front of us here at the co-op booth,
yeah,
if that bin is made in Canada and is exported to the United States, there's a pretty hefty tariff that goes,
sure,
on that bin. Or the tractor over here, it's the same sort of thing. And so it does, you know, a lot of times we focus on the farmer, but there's also the manufacturing sector, the short lines,
sure,
and some of the bin manufacturers that are really susceptible right now to some of these tariffs, and they're very concerned.
We talked about a lot about the China tariffs on canola. We know that there was a reprieve at least until the end of the year.
Yeah.
Is that uncertainty, though, like, is that going to get extended? We know the tariffs that India put on, of course, some of our crops. Does that impact investment because of the uncertainty?
Well, I think absolutely it does. That's one of the things I hear a lot in both Canada and the U.S. is one of the things that uncertainty brings is it puts capital on the sidelines.
Sure.
If you're on a board of directors, you're like, I don't know, should we be investing these hundreds of millions of dollars in this facility right now, or should we wait to see what the environment looks like? So yes, I think it does impact in investment. And it, you know, you use China as the example. Honestly, that's not for certain either. I try to remind farmers all the time that, yeah, right now it's Canada and China are friends on. Those tariffs have been pulled back. It doesn't mean that lasts forever.
Right.
You know, Canada's right in the middle between the U.S. and China. Say Canada and the U.S. sort out their CUSMA issues. We could be facing China tariffs after that as a retaliation. Like, I think we need to be a little bit more comfortable in the uncomfortableness of the current global trade environment. There's no mood right now where, or it doesn't appear that we're going back to where it's like, okay, trade deal signed or agreement on tariffs, and that's going to be how it is in perpetuity. We're
right.
Just not, that's not how it really is working right now.
This is maybe a tough question to answer, but since we've seen kind of the trade uncertainty, generally speaking, prompted by the United States, but this spark of tariff talk and,
yep,
retaliatory tariffs, is there any ability, or have you seen any shock absorbers built into agriculture in any way to try and, on a forward-looking basis, absorb some of the impact that could have on the industry?
You know, I think that's a really good question, and I think a lot of companies are trying to sort that out. Farmers, it's a lot harder. You know, that's why farm groups are really pushing for having more people on the ground in some of those markets,
right,
to try to, you know, soften the blow of some of that. What I'm hearing from a lot of the companies that are here is that, you know, they've coordinated and put together teams, added resources to those teams, where all they focus on is navigating the tariff environment. You know, if you're a global bin manufacturer, you need to understand the tariff codes and how to get,
right,
you know, how do you get products into some of these markets that are kind of putting up barriers and being very protectionist. So I think that's one of the adjustments. It's really adding people resources,
sure,
to be able to push through this time period. How long this time period lasts, I don't think anybody really knows. And it's not just about President Trump. This is the same thing as has been happening to India for a long time. You know, we've been friends on, friends off on pulse tariffs for quite some time. So it's not just about the U.S. This is happening around the world.
Right. Chatting today with Sean Haney, founder and CEO of RealAgriculture.com. You can listen to him every day with the Real Ag Minute. In fact, I was listening to your Real Ag Minute yesterday or the day before. You were talking about the port expansion on the West Coast. And I thought you were bringing up some good points about this is good news, but we still have to get it there. And
yeah.
So are we investing in rail and some certainty on the rail to get our grain to market?
This is why a lot of people believe that there needs to be more of a trade infrastructure strategy.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we jump to the, oh, shovel-ready projects. Well, some people in that arena will tell you that sometimes shovel-ready projects, they're just closest to approval. It doesn't mean that they're strategic. And we can't have like sort of a etch-a-sketch sort of hodgepodge, like we'll do this project and this one over here, and we're not really connecting the dots. We are heavily, in agriculture, heavily reliant on getting product from the prairies to port. And that happens through the Port of Vancouver for the most part. It's great to see the investment in the Port of Vancouver, but we've got to have the capacity inland and from inland to that terminal to be able to really seize the moment.
Sure.
If Prime Minister Carney's serious about diversifying Canada's trade away, you know, away from the U.S. And what he really means is USMCA plus, securing the U.S. agreement, mm-hmm. but the future trade growth needs to be more diversified. In order for Western Canada to participate in that, we have to be able to get stuff to Tidewater, and having strategic trade infrastructure all the way through the chain is absolutely critical.
And I think you said it there when you said trade infrastructure, because it's not just, I mean, the rail is important for agriculture, but it's important for mining. It's important for
potash exports, all those kinds of things. And that's not discounting what the railways are doing. They are investing, but we need to push ourselves in the Canadian market to do these things faster, and also thinking about future capacity as well, just not to today's moment. But if we are truly going to diversify our trade portfolio, we need to have infrastructure for that future capacity as well.
Sean Haney is my guest. Big meeting coming up in Halifax next week. What's going on there? What's the importance of that?
We just had the first minister's meeting in Halifax, and there's still more to come from that meeting. There's a lot more meetings to come in regards to this. This is the Ag Policy Framework.
Right.
This provides the 5-year investment plan. It handles also the BRM programming as well, which is the income stabilization for farmers in those tough years. They're trying to reform that program, maybe moving the maximum acre stability from like 3 million to 6 million per operation. That's a big thing for the Saskatchewan rancher. Mm-hmm. The cost of inventory and the price of beef has gone up. So has the cost structure, and we need to accommodate to the 2026 environment. Honestly, the minister's letter that came out on Friday, a lot of people are a little bit disappointed. Great words, but we need to probably have a little bit higher expectation. I think now the pressure is on the ministers of agriculture across the country to really seize this moment to come forward with a new policy framework starting in 2028 that really makes an impact for the industry.
Chatting today with Sean Haney. Just a second for one more question. I mentioned this. I actually brought it up with the Premier this morning when I had him on the show. Two Saskatchewan research farms that were facing closure now may get a second chance. How important do you see research farms when it comes to agriculture, the two in Saskatchewan, the Indian Ed and Scott research farms as an example? How important are they to Sask agriculture, to agriculture in Canada in general?
Yeah, well, they are important. They were really fell victim to those federal cuts that were made. The province has signed this MOU to potentially take them over. Whether they're in the mix or they are not, we need to have more of a commitment to research and it be connected to that longer-term plan. That is the investment for 5, 10, 20 years from now, and making sure, specifically to those research stations, variety development and also research around weed science. You know, we've got a lot of weed resistance growing across the country. You look at where kochia is today versus where it was 5 years ago. It is growing, and we need to have the tools and the research, the agronomic knowledge, to be able to supply farmers with that to tackle these problems going forward.
I have an agronomist on the show tomorrow, and I think that's an important point, Sean, because you think about innovation in agriculture, a lot of times people point to things like drones or just new pieces of equipment, technology, self-driving equipment, those types of things. But a lot of agriculture innovation has to do with research and development of seed, pesticides, all of those types of things. So that's an important area, growing area.
Drones and those things don't matter if we don't have the proper technology to facilitate through those kind of application methods. Yeah. So there's applied research, and then there's basic research, and we need to be committed to both.
Always appreciate you giving us some time, Sean. Thanks for stopping by the booth.
Hey, thanks a lot, and enjoy the show, and appreciate all the listeners' interest in agriculture.